Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, well-known writer in many genres, Linda Hutzel Manning. So when you published that summer in Franklin, you went on a book tour across Canada. Was this a good way to sell books?
Yeah, it's a good way to sell books. I basically had to do it all myself because, I mean, it used to be that I guess there are very few publishers that are really big names in Canada that, you know, get promoted and go across and do things. But I had to basically find all the different places where I could go and do it. And I waited until there was a writer's annual general meeting in Vancouver, which meant I would get a certain amount of money as a travel grant to get there. So that helped pay for it. And then I Winnipeg, which is my hometown. I left when I was 9, but it's still my hometown. No, I guess Cobourg is too. I was able to contact bookstore there, and then I did a reading in Calgary. And then I got the Vancouver Public Library because my niece at that point was the program director.
The very useful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to be, I say to writers, you know, you're in this sheltered, quiet place writing your book. But if you want to really promote it, you got to become a vacuum cleaner salesman and put on your cheap suit and your fedora and just get out there and pitch. Because right. Nobody's going to do it for you.
So what's your favorite way to sell your books now?
Well, readings are the best way, you know, really. There has been a huge amount of interest in Mufet. I think there wasn't, well, the problem with Fearless and Determined, the memoir, was it came out in October 2019. And then, of course, we all know what happened. I had 15 readings canceled that I'd set up. And then I think I about five or six of them I did on Zoom after that when I got in touch with them. But you don't sell books, you know, it's not
no,
the same.
No.
So, I mean, I just recently went up this past weekend to Creemore, Ontario, through a friend of mine, a contact up there, and did a reading of my memoir. And I actually sold quite a few Mufets as well. But that had been organized before the pandemic. And then, of course, it fell apart. And then they reactivated it. It was a historical society up there. So that was really good, you know. But the problem is, and you know that, Felicity, after a book's been out a couple of years, it gets more and more difficult to pitch it.
Yes, that's right. Anyway. I know that your readings have been very successful. Well, how about reading to us and from another of your books? What will you choose?
Well, I'll pick something completely different. This is That Summer in Franklin. It is still in print. It was published by Second Story Press in, I have to look it up, when it was published, 2011, so quite a long time ago. And it's the story of two women who are in their 40s now, but when they were high school students, they worked in a hotel dining room, and a very unfortunate incident occurred, and that pulls them back together when they're in their 40s, because each of them ends up having to put a parent into the local nursing home, and that's how they meet again. So the first chapter, there's Hannah and there's Colleen. Hannah's a high school teacher, still teaching. Colleen has 5 children and didn't leave Franklin. Hannah's living in Toronto. They've had totally different lives. They have nothing in common, really, other than this incident back when they were 15 years old. So I don't even mention that in the first chapter, but I thought I'd just give you a little bit of background. So Hannah watches the windshield wipers swish, swish back and forth. Late afternoon November rain jet streaming off the car as she attempts to hold her expressway speed below the posted limit. Sometime this morning, and no one could tell her when, Hannah's 77-year-old mother, Edith, was found collapsed and unconscious in her dressing gown on Franklin's rain-drenched East Beach. Hannah, called from her 10th grade English class and flung into this disaster, made her way to the office feeling as though she were moving through thickened air. The secretary was, of course, more than sympathetic when Hannah explained why she would need a sub for the rest of Monday and Tuesday as well. It takes a good hour and a half to drive from Toronto to Franklin. How could this have happened? Hannah wants a blow-by-blow description. What time did her mother leave the house this morning? How long did she wander about in the wind and drizzle? Why didn't someone on the street notice her? Who found her collapsed on the stone beach, her pink quilted housecoat matted with sand and seaweed? In some degree of shock and hypothermia, that's what the policewoman had said in an almost breezy tone of voice, as if she were giving the weather report. The more she tries to concentrate on her mother and the crisis at hand, the more her past reinvents itself. Contradictions bridging the almost 5.5 decades of her life. Duty versus escape. Memory versus selective amnesia. Roots versus branches. For the last 40 years, climbing as far up and out as she could, hoping never to return, and at the same time, desperately wanting to. This stress, in turn, brings on a massive dose of guilt. She hasn't visited her mother enough and has developed avoidance as a life skill. Dutiful Christmas trips, always, a few days whirling in with presents, arriving in darkness, leaving in darkness, short compartmentalized visits, bounded by time in her teaching life. Summer holidays rarely, always a legitimate excuse. Summer school and courses kept her feet moving up the pay scale ladder. Travel related to the curriculum, renovations to her tiny nest. The last few years, when she does visit, she has refused to admit anything is changing, especially those silent but pervasive ravages of time. Now her mother, the master organizer and money manager, typing and filing until just before her 70th birthday, her mother, the supreme sacrificer, who subsequently grayed and withered into retirement, has become unpredictable, confused, no longer able to cope. Not that there haven't been warnings, telltale indicators Hannah refused to acknowledge, too much dried up food in the fridge, too many newspapers and magazines piled under tables, chairs, the bed, that undefinable yet distinctive smell pulling everything downward, like shabby slippers shuffling across some unseen line. The few neighbors Hannah has spoken to over the years kept tabs of things, kindly taking out garbage and shoveling walks. One neighbor, who had last year quietly asked about a number in case of emergency, gave Hannah's school phone number to the police. And the last 40 years, an unwieldy number, 40, with neither the stature of 50 nor the glamour of 25. 40 years, 4 decades, 2 score, too many. And importantly, what to show for it? Her mother has asked this every time she visited, every Sunday when she phoned. Two sets of things have evolved over the years, those spoken and those not. Two slim volumes of published poetry spoken, given autographed to her mother, who never mentioned them, although Hannah knows she has shown them to other people. Whenever she runs into neighbors walking back with her mother from their customary Christmas Day trek along the beach, or after a hurried trip to the supermarket to stock up on staples, someone is calling, running over as she unloads overflowing plastic grocery bags from the trunk. "You're the poet. How charming. Wonderful to be so creative. Such a rewarding hobby." Sincere comments, she has to assume, but never acknowledged or commented on by her mother. And Hannah, head of English at Charles R. Fenshaw Secondary School, highly organized and known to be old-fashioned tough on students, 1 year left until well-deserved retirement. With her mother, Hannah still slips into abyss of uncertainty and neediness, wanting only to please, yet having no idea how to begin, as if the 40 years never existed, as if they were a book she is reading about someone else.
Thank you so much, Linda, for joining us on Zoom today and telling us about the history of finding Mufet and reading his story for us. And thank you too for your insights into marketing. I'm sure they will be helpful to many. Where can readers buy copies of your books? And are you planning a launch for Finding Mufet?
Oh, yes. The book is available at Let's Talk Books, at Furby Books in Port Hope, at Lighthouse Books in Brighton. It's also, you can order it directly from the publisher, and it's also available on Amazon. I have five readings lined up. The first one is this Saturday. That's the Coburg one. The first one at the Coburg Public Library at 10 o'clock Saturday morning. And then I have Port Hope is doing the following week, then Belleville and Warkworth and Brighton.
And listeners, to connect with us at Word on the Hills, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived, and you can listen to them at any time. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning in to the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week at 1 p.m. on Sunday on 89.7 FM, truly local radio.